when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 26 of Prepping 2.0. This is going to be a good one. You're going to like this. We have the real Dan Morgan, more on that in a moment, and Alaska Prepping. And it's going to be good. And then in the after show, Patreons were able to send us questions for Dan Morgan. The reason I say the real Dan Morgan, in case you've never heard the name Dan Morgan, that's fair, is that he is a character in 299 Days and in book 3 of A Great State. He's actually in both books. Yes. Extremely limited universe of people who are in both those book series. There's Grant Mattson. And there's Dan Morgan. And who else?
And there's pseudo-ish Sean Swanson.
Yes, Sean Swanson. And of course, Dan knows Sean, and we'll talk about maybe that in a moment. Dan is a really interesting guy. He's a real dude. His name is really Dan Morgan. And the reason I picked that name for him in the book of Dan Morgan was I have no creativity whatsoever, and I just went with a real name because otherwise I'd forget, you know, because there are 350 characters in the book series. So, and Dan will tell you a little bit about his background. He has a military background in securing locations that I think would be of great interest to preppers. He's also a former canine handler, and that I think would be of great interest to preppers. And rounding out the reasons that he's a guest, he lives in Alaska and has a lot of thoughts about prepping in general and sort of Alaska stuff. And all, I mean, because Alaska is all different thing. So that's who we have on, the real Dan Morgan. Shelby, why don't you go ahead and tell folks about the top 100 list?
I will do that real quick, though. I always encourage people, if you want to check out previous episodes or just see what we do here at Prepping 2.0, go to our website, prepping2-0.com. You can catch up on past episodes. And you can see the list that I'm about ready to talk about there. We have a list, a link to a list there on the top 100 things that will disappear in a collapse. And that list is based upon the experts that put it together on pretty much Bosnia.
Bosnia-centric.
Yes, very much so. And so we're on number 15, number 15 thing that will disappear. And we know this, we as preppers can kind of surmise this, but propane cylinders, I can see those being gone in a month or two. I mean, propane, the thing that about propane that people need to realize, in case you don't, it's something I learned later on in my whole prepping world, is propane is a very stable fuel. It doesn't degrade. If you store it, it keeps, unlike gasoline, unlike oil, other fuels. So it's very desirable that way. But the problem is those little containers. You need to have those little tanks, the little tiny ones, and even the medium-sized ones and the big ones. So they will disappear very quickly. So if you have some, don't throw them away. Don't give them away. Find a way to store them. What would you say to that, Glenn?
Yeah, we did in a couple shows ago, I think it was number 13, were propane heaters and lanterns. We talked about all the cool things you can do with propane. And probably later on, Dan will be telling us about some of his experiences and how he's used propane stuff. But you can't. Here's what I used to think, by the way, prepping 1.0, and now I've learned something, prepping 2.0. That is, I just assumed that you could just take an empty propane cylinder, let's say a barbecue size thing, and you could just walk up to a bigger propane tank and just like plug it in and it would like fill up. Apparently physics is a thing, and it doesn't work that way. So basically, the tanks will equal out, I'm told, to whatever level is, they will equalize. So if the big propane tank is half full or half empty, if you're a pessimist, your little tank will become half full or half empty. Don't know if that's true, but I just want to let folks know it's not as simple as like, you know, plugging in your phone to a bigger battery and it like fills it up. So that's something to consider.
So then we also have, if we're talking about propane, we also need to talk about
Hank Hill,
excuse me.
Yeah, Frank Hill. We don't even know who that
Who's
guy is.
Who's that? And a character in a book, I don't know.
I listened to my impression of Hank Hill in the past episode, and I thought it was pretty awesome. And then I actually heard it through headphones. It was not that awesome. So I'm not going to duplicate my Hank Hill impersonation because it wasn't that awesome. I'm done.
So if you want to hear it, you need to go back to episode 13.
Back a couple episodes.
It's pretty funny. He does it often. I've noticed, though, that you don't do it as much. So, okay, that would
I heard how awful it was, and now it grates on my ears, too.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so the next thing that we want to talk about is, and we love it when our fans, you, our listeners, fans, send us emails, send us messages, especially ones that kind of give us the chills a little bit and makes us feel good about what we do. So if you go and look at Shelby Gallagher, Shelby A. Gallagher author on Facebook, you know that recently Glenn and I were at the Puget Sound Preparedness Expo, and we met an amazing couple. We met more than one. We met everybody there. It's amazing when you meet people at prepping conferences. They're awesome. But this woman and her husband came, and she was, you could tell she was not in good health. And what, come to find out,
not a wheelchair, but she was like she had a cart or something, you know, to move her around in.
Well, and she could move around, and then she could sit down. It was the ability to sit and rest. Come to find out that she had really recently had an open heart surgery in Seattle and made a big point that to be able to be recovered from that enough, and it was only days before that she had the surgery. She literally was just discharged the day before so that she could make it to this expo to meet us.
Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy.
I'm getting chills. This happens all the time. The goosebumps. This happens. It was amazing. And then we were just talking to her. In fact, and we get really busy at these things. We're talking to everybody. And I made a point to kind of like slip out. And I kind of like came back in another door because I saw she was there. And over there, her and her husband. And I came and just talked to him. It's an amazing story. And so go ahead.
And let me add to that. They were very gracious, too. They're like, oh, we don't want to take all your time. I'm like, no, you sit right here and you stay right here. You made the incredible effort to get discharged from the hospital. Come and see us. You can have it. You can camp out here by our table. That's fine. So anyway, so after the expo, they send us a message. And they are Patreon supporters. And they have a cute little tag or whatever handle called That Nub. So here's the message. It says, hey guys, That Nub here. The wife and I met you in Bremerton last week. She is the one who had open heart surgery. I wanted to thank you for making her feel so welcomed. It really made her day. She is very excited to see you both again in Prosser. Let me stop right there. Prosser is another preparedness expo that we're going to be going at in mid-April. So just so you know. She's very excited to see both again in Prosser and is telling the only prepper friend we have all about the event. I guess that is all I really have to say. So, That Nub. P.S. Shelby, we finished book one and are into book two right after she carried the mountain lion back. That's a part of the storyline. So, awesome. Thank you, That Nub. If you're listening to this, thank you. It was a complete honor to meet you and your wife, and I hope Prosser's not the last time we see you. I hope we get to see you more often, and just Godspeed to her on her recovery. And even just that day, you could tell just it, being there lifted her spirits. It was a great day, and I'm like getting choked up just remembering that day meeting her. It was awesome.
Well, and that's why we love all the folks in this community, because there's cool stuff like this that happens. And Shelby mentioned the Prosser Expo. By the time folks hear this, it will be over, unfortunately. But it was April 13th and 14th in Prosser Liberty. What? Prosser Liberty? Did I get that wrong? No. Eastern Washington, where Prosser is not going to be a state much longer, we hope, and it's going to be the State of Liberty and a split-off thing. So it's in Prosser Liberty. I'm trying to, like, you know, propagate the vibe of Liberty being its own state by, like, saying those words. Not like me saying it is going to make Congress say it's okay, but, I mean, you know.
But it's getting the vernacular out there and getting used to the vernacular, absolutely, because that's what it's going to be. So I will say this. Let me just jump in here really quick. Three expos that you and I have decided that we are going to make part of our kind of tour.
The Golden Triangle, we call it.
The Golden Triangle. There will be the one in Bremerton, which will generally be about February. There will be then that's the Puget Sound Preparedness Expo. Then there's the Northwest Preparedness Expo in Prosser, generally around April. Then there's the Inland Preparedness Expo, which is in Sandpoint, Idaho, generally in September. So, folks, if you want to meet us, those are the three that we will prioritize on our list of places to be. There could be more, and we're going to start getting that up on the website and things like that once we get dates settled. So just so you know, there you go.
Yeah, absolutely. And these expos are put on by like normal people. We had a big hand in organizing the Bremerton one, for example. This is not like some big, you know, business or something. Expos are great. You get to meet people. Well, I want to introduce Dan, the real Dan Morgan, you know, whose covert name in the books is Dan Morgan. So Dan, welcome. And why don't you tell us a little about yourself?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, Dan Morgan. I also go by Rubber Tramp 907, and there's a story behind that.
but, I bet there is. Remember, we're on FCC-controlled terrestrial radio, so thank you, Dan.
Nope, that's my handle for Instagram as well. And the reason I chose Rubber Tramp 907 is I went outside of Alaska a little over a year ago now, and traveled to Lower 48 for 16 months in a camper and rubber tramped my way around the country. And so that's what I did. But otherwise, I live here in Alaska at a place called Rabbit Creek, south of Anchorage. And I came up here first in 87. I joined the Air Force when I was 17. And this was my first duty station. And I ended up coming back three times total. Last one I came back and retired 20 years later. And in between that time, I traveled the world and been to a lot of cool places. You mentioned Bosnia. I was there for 8 months back in at the end of the war there, and that's an interesting lots of interesting things to talk about that scenario on many levels, politically, prepping wise, etc. So it's a huge deal. But I retired in 2007 and I stayed in Alaska, and I work in the oil field as a health, safety, security, environmental manager.
Very cool. And I wanted to mention, when you were in the Air Force, you did Air Force Security Forces, which, among other things, do base defense and law enforcement, kind of like MPs, but I think you do more. AFSF does more. They do, you know, base protection. And you were a canine guy, and we're going to talk about that later. Why don't we just jump in? You mentioned Bosnia, because I think that is such a potential parallel to what we're looking at. Tell us about Bosnia and what you learned from that experience.
Well, I can tell you that one of the first things I learned is nothing is as it appears. We were being told by the news at the time, and I won't turn this political right or left or anything like that, but I can tell you on the news that they were looking for two bad guys, right? Radovan Karadžić and Slobodan Milošević, the two bad guys in that scenario, right? And they came into our checkpoints two or three times a month. We had them every single time, and we're told to let them go. So tell me these guys, there's the crazy manhunt for these guys and everything else. And you know what? They knew exactly where they were the whole time.
Was that to extend the war or keep things going?
You know, I think it was. I think they weren't ready to stop the war yet, when they could have snatched both of those guys at any time.
You know? Wow. That's kind of like breaking news. I mean, that's kind of crazy.
and where I get slightly ired up as I listen to you say that, Dan, at the cost of how many lives to
exactly.
do that.
Exactly.
That's where I get angry at that. And yes, and because somebody is gaining by that being elongated, others suffered and died. That's
absolutely
sad.
And then, you can go on there. I was there when Ron Brown was blown out of the sky. They crashed for weather conditions or whatever they said it was, but wasn't necessarily true. Do you recall who Ron Brown was?
Yeah, he was, I think, the chair of the Democrat National Committee, and was a big guy in the Clinton administration, and there are a lot of questions about how he died, because it seemed kind of weird at the time. So what you're saying is consistent with other things I've heard.
Well, and he was set to testify a week after that. So, you can put that into perspective as you will. But it was an interesting time. We were part of a I was with the United Nations at the time, which was a totally bizarre experience, because our commander was French. We were operating under the guise of they broke up the NATO coalition. So it was a joint NATO-UN operation. We had to work with our partners. We got along great with the Finns, the Norwegians, the Swedes, but we also had Russians there. And wow, what an interesting scenario. They were being paid. The government of Russia had stopped paying them, the army troops, and the only way they were getting paid is getting cash from the United Nations. So essentially, they were mercenary, but they were also supplying the Bosnians with weaponry and ammunition that was being used against us. So,
God, the Russians are really good at that, aren't they?
Oh, they're very duplicitous. Very duplicitous. You know, when we get rocket attacked, and we wouldn't know until about the third time when the Russians started, you know, grabbing their helicopters and shoving them into hardened aircraft shelters that something was coming, because they sure weren't telling us, you know.
You know, and this is amazing to me because I just have your basic, you know, world history kind of knowledge. I'll tell you that Russia and Serbia, and of course Bosnia was a collection of Serbs, Croats, and Kosovars, and aka mm-hmm. Albanians. Everybody knows that Russia and Serbia are tight. And
very
for
tight.
Serbia to be, it was, I don't know, portrayed as the aggressor, probably was, don't know, that's not the purpose of what I'm saying, but the Serbs in Bosnia were obviously combatants, right? They were the partisans, and they were trying to kill Kosovars, and I imagine the Kosovars were not taking it real well and were probably killing Serbs. And then you've got Croats and maybe even Slovenians, I don't even know, but you've got this mix of ethnic groups that hate each other, and there's a breakdown in order, and they seem to go after each other, dot, dot, dot. We'll be seeing that soon. But everybody would know that the Russians were not neutral, and how you would put them in a position to be around American lives when they're probably basically, yeah, lazing and calling in airstrikes and crazy stuff like that. I mean, does anybody find it like informative, like an interesting fact that the Russians were shooting 5.45 by 39 and so were the Serbs? I mean, doesn't that tell you there's maybe some links there? Oh my goodness, I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Yeah, there's a whole lot to that, but yeah, it was definitely an interesting time, and I think there's a lot. So when you talk to your veterans that have been out and done things, they've witnessed parts of history that will never be, I don't know, talked about or scrutinized oftentimes. But I've been very, very fortunate in my career. I did a lot of really good, fun stuff, and absolutely loved it. Canine handling was one of my favorites, you know. I did that for about 7 years total, and then involved with them even longer than that as a NCOIC of various projects and various flight chief, that sort of thing. So yeah, it was great.
And just so everyone knows, the names of the dogs in the books are the names of your dog, I want to say, and then some other dogs that were affiliated. So I actually ask you for the names of dogs you worked with and put them in the book. So there's another fun fact, right?
Speaking of dogs, my dog just activated the automatic vacuum.
Nice.
Goofing around. Thank you for that, Lola. But yeah, no, yeah, I love, yeah, Adis was my favorite. She was absolutely, just an incredible patrol dog, great drug dog. Just really, man. I hold every dog to her standard, and it's hard. It's a hard standard to fill.
And people out there will want to know what kind of dogs they were. I remember, but I'll let you tell the story. I mean, what breed?
Well, Adis was German Shepherd, but the military. So the whole canine program for the all of the military is run by the Air Force at Lackland Air Force Base in Texas, and the breeds they use are German Shepherds, Belgian Shepherds, Dutch Shepherds, Belgian Malinois, and those are the main breeds. They did start, it was had a couple false starts with it, but they the Air Force is running a Belgian Malinois breeding program there at Lackland. So they don't have to, because before they would have to send buyers all over the world to buy dogs all the time. And I don't think that they're supplying all their own dogs yet. I don't think it's possible because, you know, the MPs have a lot of dogs. We supply the Marine Corps, the Navy, and FAA these days. So they're part of the program as well now.
Nice. Nice. Well,
and of course, you were a canine handler, and that relates to securing air bases because you're making sure that, you know, there people aren't driving explosives. I don't know, like the Russian soldiers who aren't getting paid. You're not people aren't driving explosives in, and you can see everybody out there who's read 299 days. You can see why Dan was a great guy for me to base the character of Dan, the head of the gate guards, on, because, you know, I'd talk to him and he would tell me these things and give me all these great ideas. And he's the kind of guy that when stuff falls apart and you need to guard something, and a guy, obviously, you know, is senior NCO, to run things, right? This is the guy. And so it is so often the case, like with Special Forces Ted and others, you know, people would read these books and assume that I had this amazing knowledge of military details. Nope, not that good. I just knew cool people, and I would talk to them, and they would tell me stuff, and then it would play out. So that Dan is another example of that. People, I realized, Dan, that people are wondering how we met. How did we meet, Dan? Because, I mean, I wouldn't just normally, like, I wasn't in Bosnia. I don't live in Alaska. How would I run into you?
Oh, we had a mutual contact, and I was trying to think of how long ago that was. And if I think I'm right when I say it's well over 10 years now.
Yeah, it was 2008.
Yeah. So, we just had mutual interests and got to talking. We both, we did, the word's slipping my mind, met through a podcast, a mutual interest podcast, and got to know each other through that.
Yeah, and it was the Survival Podcast with Jack Spirko, and then we would get on the forum, the Survival Podcast forum, which is also mentioned in the books. Once again, not being creative. Yeah, that's right. We were moderators. Not being creative, just that, and then we started to get to know each other, and then thought it was a crazy idea for this book, and I'm like, hey, who would be a character who would run gate guards? I don't know. How about Dan? And then, you know, people think I'm kidding when I say that I just know all these really interesting people, and writing this book was just sort of connecting all the stories of all these people, and then amazing, richer story comes out of it. And it's just because I, for whatever reason, run into guys like you and Special Forces Ted and all that stuff. Well, Dan, we have about a minute, so I'm probably not going to start a big, huge topic. What are some things you can tell folks for the next 45 seconds?
Well, you know, it was interesting because we were talking about, I get a lot of questions about, you know, what dog's the best kind of dog, that sort of thing. And you know what? It's whatever dog that you can work with. There is no breed specific. You know, if you can save a dog, I would say save a dog and put it to work. Right. Nice. You know, I have my breed favorites. But I'm not going to go shell out $2,000 for an Uber dog when you can find that same Uber dog that needs rescued. So
that's awesome, Dan. And I, now that I think you've just left us a good note to keep us curious, because we're going to flesh this out more on the other side of the break. Everyone, don't go away.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this. All right, preppers, we'd like to take this moment and recognize some of our great sponsors. Let's see, looks like this segment is available. Yep, this space is available for you. It's reserved for a patriot, prepper, freedom-loving company who has a product that would interest our listeners and would be proud to partner with us. To reserve your ad space, contact Shelby Gallagher at shelbygallagher321@gmail.com. That's shelbygallagher321@gmail.com. And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher. With us today is Dan Morgan with his non-fake name out of Glenn Tate's books, the 10-book series, 299 days.
Any other books that Dan might be in?
He is, and that's what we want to talk about. He just learned today, as we're doing this interview, that he has a part in my three-book series, the third book. It is not yet published, and he is a character in the third book.
So, what did you name him? What? How creative are you?
Well, his name's Dan Morgan, because, and so Dan, first of all, let me ask you this, now that you're with us, how does it feel to know that you're yet in another book?
I'm shocked.
Well, good. Nobody has said, you know what, I wish you hadn't done that. Most people,
it's an honor, you know, it's really mm-hmm. cool, and to be thought of that way, and it's an honor, but it's also it's a shock as well.
Very good. Well, good. Well, I hope you enjoy it when you get to the point where you're reading it. And I will say this, kind of a teaser to everyone. Glenn, you and I have talked about how the third book in my series will have carryover chapters where there will be Pierce Point meets up with a great state, and Pierce Point being the main setting of your books. And that's where Dan's character comes in, because I have to bring back some of those characters and bring in some of those characters. So, Dan, that's your hint to our listeners and readers and fans. That's your hint. We'll leave it at that. How about that?
Sounds good.
Awesome. So, good. So, yeah, now, Glenn, you guys get – I'm going to sit and listen to you talk about security.
Yeah, so as we mentioned, Dan did security forces, and a lot of people don't understand what that is in the Air Force, but I kind of mentioned it's base defense, because you have to secure airfields, not just like the actual like runways and stuff. You have to push out quite a perimeter because bad guys have rockets and stuff, and they'll try to shoot down aircraft. So in the books, Dan, obviously your character organizes the gate guards, and it's not just guarding a gate. There's all kinds of security measures that are taken. There's a waterway and some other stuff. So for preppers out there, let's say they have either they're bugging in or they're bugging out, and they've got a retreat or they've got a bug out location. And obviously the geography and the setup of it is going to vary so much that you can't really, Dan, take that into consideration, because it'd be like 1,000 answers. But what are some kind of basic tips for keeping, I'll call it your base, right? It could be your house. It could be your neighborhood. It could be part of the county that's Patriot held and all working together. So what are some tips for securing a base?
Well, and, you know, first and foremost, access control is definitely one of them. But, you know, being able to funnel people into and out of a specific area, you know, coming into your property, so you can control A, shut it down, or B, open it up rapidly in the event that you need to evacuate or let people in. So, but that's knowing all avenues of approach and egress, being comfortable with it. And I was sitting there, you know, thinking about kind of pre-gaming it, and it dawned on me. I did it subconsciously, but I didn't give it a name. And, you know, range cards, are you familiar with the range card concept?
I am not.
So range cards are what you would use in a fighting position, right? So you take up your fighting position, exactly, you improve your position, and then you draw out what's in front of you. And ideally, if you have the time to do it, which most people do now, is to know the range distance is on your property. You know, how far is it to your property line from your house, or from different places around your property? How far is it from the entry point? You know, all of those things are important, and then you draw it out. You know, and that's going to help you with maximum effective range of your weapon, maximum range of your weapon, or just the time you may need to do something, buy you more time. I know if somebody's here, it's going to take them 3 minutes to get from there to here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And in the books, I'll keep harkening back to that. One of the scenes, there are some old guys who are kind of deer hunters, and I think some preppers might think, oh, guys like that, they're not really useful because they don't have like a bunch of tactical gear on that they'll never wear, like some of the keyboard commandos. And so, but in the book, there are some old guys sitting up on a hill. It's a real place out by the real cabin. And somebody asked these old guys, you know, how far is it to the gate? And one of the old guys smiles and he says, 217 yards, more or less. And he smiles. That's what you're talking about. Knowing those distances.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And old hunters, anybody that can sneak up on a deer close enough to shoot it is tactically sound.
Yep, a friend of mine who has done amazing, cool stuff. I'll leave it at that. He has a theory, and that is, you know, all us preppers. I mean, he's a prepper. We're always thinking about this, this, and this. You know what's going to kill most preppers? Guys with 270s, you know, deer hunting rifles and 7mm, you know, deer hunting rifles. That's the stuff to worry about. Don't worry about, you know, the mall ninja guy. It's going to be those guys. And that's the reason to know the range. I'm going to put you on the spot here. There are some really good, now I think trip wires and things like that, wires that set off a shotgun, basically blank. It's not blasting, you know, to like kill people with the shot. It's a noise thing, you know, a noise alert. Very, very affordable now. Another example of prepping 2.0, you know, 1.0, 10 years ago, some of this stuff either didn't exist or was hard to find. It was kind of like for military and law enforcement folks or whatever. Now it's kind of everywhere. So talk about ways like early alert systems, not just gates, but some other alert systems.
Well, I'm a bigger fan of brake beams and that sort of thing. When you start putting wires out, you can do that. That's good for maybe a hasty camp, something like this, or hasty defense position. But, you know, for long, all over your property, I've got moose, I've got bear, I've got dogs, I've got lynx. They would be constantly setting these things off, you know, and I don't want to do that. That's not practical for me here. But, you know, if you're way out there and you feel like you're in that much of a, or you're in such a situation where that's really, truly important, I would look into, because they've got some great systems for brake beam technology. And that's just basically an infrared, no one can see it. And you just put it up at avenues of approach on, big fan of the game cams now will alert you if something comes into its field of view.
Aren't those amazing, the way that technology and prices have just made it so much better? It's a game changer. It's a cliche, but true.
Well, and when you look at the technology for security, home security now has gotten such that you can really manipulate your system to, you know, look for, you know, let me know about things over 3 feet tall. Let me know on this whole big map, I want to know just about this particular area right here. And that may be an avenue of approach. That may be a break in the fence. It could be a ravine or a wash, something like this. It's just really good tech. So that's kind of where I go. You know, I know a lot of folks, I tend to think, I love preppers to death, but I think a lot of them tend to really overcomplicate things and overthink it when they should be thinking about other stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's it. I don't think it has to be. If it's overly complicated, you're going to screw it up.
Yeah, and you were mentioning, you know, infrared beams, and I know some stuff, these game cameras and things will send stuff to your phone. One thing that prepping 2.0ers need to be thinking about is whenever you say it'll send stuff to your phone, the automatic thing a lot of preppers, including me, think about, probably Shelby too, is, well, what if phones don't work? Yes, that's true. However, I think, and you can tell from the books, from my books and from Shelby's books, that we think collapses and dangerous situations start relatively slowly. I mean, there's a period of time in which there's electricity. So we're always talking about layering, right? With food, have everything Absolutely. From MREs to a greenhouse, right? And layer it and they're all layer your security, not just in the proximity radius sense, but have stuff, you know, game cameras, for example, that go to your phone that are awesome if the electricity's still up. For all we know, it's like a 5 or 10 year kind of Bosnia thing. And if I recall, in Bosnia, for a fair amount of the time, the electricity was on, right?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, and so, yeah, this doesn't have to be all just like, you know, primitive stuff. Use technology while it's available, and when
exactly.
it isn't, have a backup plan.
Right. Have a backup to the backup. And I'll give you an example. I was in Seattle on November, let me think, I think it was November 8th.
Sorry to hear that you had to go to that town. But
I was traveling through. I was coming from Denver. And Shelby, remind me that we got to talk about Colorado.
Yes, wonderful, good.
But I landed in Seattle and I turned on my phone and my phone was being blown up. And I quickly kind of surmised that there was a earthquake in Alaska. And they tell me, they make an announcement on the plane as we're taxiing that Anchorage had a 7.0. It's not likely that we'll be flying into Anchorage today, so make your plans or whatever. And I was like, oh, hell, you know. Well, I'm trying to call, and nothing. I can't get a call through, but I can text. And, you know, my bosses are checking on me. My woman's checking on me, make sure, and I'm trying to check on her. Well, you know, she's in a building in Anchorage working, and windows are falling out, and she responded to her condo, couldn't get in because the whole building had shifted, and, you know, she's trying to get into the dog. She had to get some guys to kick the door in. So her place got torqued pretty good. But I'm, you know, she's not up at the house here, which is, you know, kind of outside of Anchorage. What do? I look at my cameras. My cameras are on and they're working, and I can't see, you know, all inside the house, but I can see around it, and I don't see anything on fire or collapsed except for my wood pile. And I texted my neighbor to ask him to do a walk around. And one of the things was I have a house generator that I installed the week before. And
nice.
My security system, my camera system all stayed running when no one else had electricity for 6 hours up in this area. So that's when we talk about the tech and you know, prepping, having a backup to the backup to the backup. I've made me feel really good that I could get a visual right away, and then I could text somebody to do a backup for me. And having those relationships and the, you know, using the technology and the relationships to help secure your place is a big deal.
That's awesome. That is exactly what we talk about when so many times people, when we talk to them about these sorts of things, whether it be, yes, this security and having a backup to the backup, they get one dimensional. It's like, well, I'm not going to use this is what happens is I'm not going to use a game cam because when the electricity goes out, it's like, well, no. Okay. So you're going to shut off an entire option to yourself when all you need to do is think through dynamic ways to create a backup. That's prepping 2.0 right there to me. So that is amazing. We've talked about that. We're not going to take this too far, but I'll put out there, hey, we put out there on our social media, we're thinking about doing freeze drying. We don't think freeze drying food is good because of da 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 da. Well, you've just shut off an entire way of preserving food. When if you just think about dynamically, how can you use this as a tool out of a toolbox instead of one tool out of your toolbox? So, awesome example. You just gave me warm fuzzies with how to use, and not only that, and it goes to show we need relationships. You need to know your neighbors. You need to know your community. You need to know that we've heard this before from John Jacob Schmidt, great person we've had on this show in regards to his expertise in comms. Texting will be one of those things that you will be able to do when the phones aren't working. Awesome use of all your tools. Oh my gosh, Dan, you just gave me the warm fuzzies. Glenn is dying to say something over there. And then, yes, I'm curious to what you wanted to say about Denver and Colorado. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, the you know, prepping 2.0, we always talk about some of the topics in 2.0 are water, which isn't entering this conversation, but everyone knows it's important, comms and community and night vision. But so it sounds like you just, in your example, your great example of using current technology in a layering, you know, you mentioned community, having a good relationship with this guy. Obviously, comms is important in this, not just the texting, but when we were talking about entry points and everything else. It doesn't have to be elaborate, but you got to have comms of some kind because yelling, hey, you, isn't really going to be the effective way. So comms are part of it. And then the networking. What are your thoughts on night vision and how people now can get a hold of some stuff, maybe not as expensively as they think? What is night vision like worth it, basically?
Well, so I live in a place where it's light half the time and it's dark half the time. So half the year I won't ever even touch it. But the other half of the year, it's great. Right. I absolutely believe, I love night vision, use it for years in the military. We started out with PVS-4s, then went to PVS-7s. I think the going price for those are still in the range of $6,000. $4,000 to $6,000, I believe, last time I checked. But they've got some stuff coming out now that's just a real game changer that's not military grade that you can get online. Most of them won't ship to Alaska, by the way. I feel like they need to knock that off. We are part of the United States. So quit treating us like we're not.
They're not in Canada after all.
Oh my gosh, these people. We don't ship overseas. Well, okay. But anyway, yeah, they're a great game changer. But again, I'm not adverse to tech, but I'm also very I want to keep it as simple as possible. For night vision, you need special, most of the time you need special batteries. And that's another thing you have to buy and maintain. One thing I always carry with me is I have a monocular that I carry with me both to work and when I travel, because it's simple. It's not a pair of binos. It's just a simple, I can get a close up of something and bam, I'm done. And I can't break it. For the most part, it's very well built.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, that's good.
Oh, I was going to mention, without getting into like brands and model numbers and all of those other things, folks, night vision monoculars, which of course is just a one eye thing. You hold it up to one eye. Think of it as like a little pop can or something you put up to your eye.
Think of it like think of a pirate pulling out his, right?
His telescope.
Exactly, but they're smaller. And both night vision, the IR ones, infrared, and then also thermal. You can, and if you have both, it's really cool to have both. If you want to look, you want to walk through the dark or something, or see movement in the dark, the IR thing is really good. And then if you want to see if somebody's hiding behind a stump or somebody had walked through, right, you can see how important that would be. The thermal ones, and they're like $600. I want to say Leupold. I mean, major brands. I mean, stuff you've heard of have one. You can see if somebody's walked by. You can get a rough idea about how long ago it was, because even the heat from the bottom of your boot is picked up. And I love that ability to see if somebody's hiding behind a wood pile, because with regular IR, you don't see anything. It just sort of magnifies starlight and makes things that aren't visible with light. But if you have both those things, you're golden. And one of the cool things about having a team is that if you've got 5 or 10 people involved, if you guys can pool your money and, spend $1,200 or $1,500 or $1,000 and get a monocular, both IR and heat, it makes it possible to do it. And you are 50,000% ahead of the game as far as the general population goes. So,
well, yes. It's funny about preppers. And I love, like I said, I love the prepping community, but I also like a lot of the time how we, and you want to gravitate towards the sexy things, the binoculars and all the high tech stuff. But at the end of the day, if you're not staying healthy, if you don't have those hygiene items, you prepped up all your bullets and your food and your ammo and you're ready to defend yourself against the world, but you get sick because you weren't doing those hygiene things that you should have been doing. Because when things go sideways, people kind of lose their focus. Well, I don't say they kind of, they absolutely, a lot of times lose their focus and they don't think about the stuff that's going to keep them alive for the fight. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely, Shelby. Yeah.
So just look at the time, Dan, and these always go so short. We have about 6 minutes, and I'm going to completely change directions here. We just kind of hit on it before the break, and talking, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, on canines and how useful they are in a grid down situation. And also, you'd mentioned it, and I appreciate this. Good dogs are good dogs. The good dogs come in all different breeds. And I actually had somebody, I have to tell you this, when I had just finished book one, I got 2 or 3 emails from people. And I'm not sure if it's because of my setting of my books being in Colorado. I don't know. But they were like, you need to think about integrating canines into your storyline because they can be really helpful and kind of a game changer during a collapse situation. So this is a new topic for us. We have a couple of dogs that are really good at digging holes in our yard. They're really good at that. Not much else, but So, talk to us a little bit about dogs. Unfortunately, we've only given you about 5 minutes to do this, but love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, no problem. Like I said, you know, I have a Beauceron now, and she's French, and she's French in every way. She even acts French, and it's just irritating as all get out, but I love her to death, right?
So your dog has hair under her armpits? I'm sorry.
Oh yes, very much so. Very much so. But, you know, so, you know, everyone, and it's funny because dog people are like preppers, you know, they're really kind of, well, I'm going to get this equipment, I'm going to do this, blah, 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 and this dog, this equipment is better than that equipment because of X, Y, and Z. You know what? It's all whatever. It's whatever works for you. You know, we gravitate towards Shepherds and Malinois because of their use in policing, right? But at the end of the day, like a Belgian needs a lot of exercise, a lot of work. All right, they're a high drive, high energy dog that is going to be go, 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 go. And you better have the time to put into it, because if you don't, smart, bored dogs do stupid things. You know what I'm saying?
We do. We know more than you know.
There you go. So, you know, sometimes it's better to have a dumb dog because they don't do stupid things generally. But I would say any dog, like, you know, if you had a large property and you really wanted a dog that would, I mean, there are some dogs that love to do perimeter work. They will just walk that perimeter, your border collies, that sort of thing, you know. But they're, again, they're high drive, high energy, and need a lot of high focus to get them to a good spot.
Yeah, very good.
Does that make sense? I mean, I can go on all day about dogs, but that's... Okay. That's the rule.
Awesome. Well, and okay, so for that person who's listening right now, Dan, who's like, all right, I have a dog, I'd love them to, what are some, just if you can think of one or two things that a person could train them on, you hit on one of them, perimeter work. God, our dog would do that. Just take around the perimeter, especially some things that we're doing on our property now. What are things that dogs can do for us in a grid down besides perimeter? Can they, you know?
So a lot of things are not just about doing the perimeter security and that sort of thing. A lot of it's acting, right? So what is people's perception? And what I mean by that is that, and I explained to my, you know, when we first got Lola and, you know, my girl's taking her out for a walk, and she's never had a large dog, scary looking dog or anything like that before. And I said, you don't have to train her to be an attack dog, but what you can do is train her to get alert and using keywords like watch it, you know, watch it. And if they don't know what watch it means or watch him, but they know what your inflection is and they understand the inflection keeps them curious. And they're like, ah, and then you encourage that behavior. You teach them to come on. It basically teaches them to come on guard. Yeah. And people are less engaged or less likely to mess with her, mess with the dog. If the dog all of a sudden, you know, ears perk up and she lets out a little growl. Watch him means, you know, hey, you know, pay attention to that. It might be a threat.
Very good.
It may not work. She may never bite anybody, you know, but they don't know that.
Exactly. Very you cool.
So, deterrence is a good thing. And I know this.
Oh, huge, huge.
I mean, when I'm involved with dogs, I'm not scared of dogs. I don't really handle them per se, but when I see a dog, with the teeth out and barking like that, I'm not comfortable. I mean, there's a very, very, I don't know, primal thing in people when they see a dog like that, because dogs can tear you to shreds in some cases worse than gunfire. And absolutely. So, I mean, it's a heck of a deterrent. Well, here's a question I've always had about dogs in a collab situation. Yes, they're good for all the things we mentioned. What about people knowing that somebody lives somewhere because they hear a dog barking, not like, you know, on alert, but just in our case, our goofy dog. And by the way, our dog, Maddie Tate Gallagher, has her own Facebook page, by the way, in case you're interested. Yeah. Australian cattle dog.
Love those dogs.
They're great. They're great. But she's kind of a goofball, and she'll just like bark if there's like birds and stuff, so people could hear you. So I don't know. What is that, a possible downside?
It can be, but you know, if you put a lot of effort into training her, you can train that out of her somewhat. All right. But you also have to know. So when I look at a dog for collapse stuff, there's a couple of things that, you know, that.
And
you
Dan, know, I hate to interrupt you, but I need to take you out. This is the end of the regular show. When we come back on the after show for Patreons, we're going to talk about living and prepping in Alaska. We're going to talk about Dan's excellent road trip, Patreon questions, and play Dead or Canadian.
Let's do it.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.